This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2019, held on March 22 and 23, 2019, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Welcome. I'm glad you're here. I also could wonder why you're here. And I'd love to hear from every one of you, and we can't. But there can be numerous reasons for you choosing this workshop, okay? You may be here because your relationship with your team players is good, but you want it better. You may be here because you struggle with your team players. There might be jealousy going on. There might be competition going on. And you want maybe some help on that. You may be here because you think, oh, Lord, why did you put her on my team? Or you may be here partly because out of frustration. Maybe you've blamed the men on your team for how the women are interacting. And I see a yawn back there, and I want to apologize right away. This is the worst time of the day to have a breakout session, as well as it being the end. You're fine. As well as it being the end of two very full days. We're all tired. So that means I have to be very captivating, right? I'm not promising anything. Whatever your reasons for being here are, I'm glad you're here. And I welcome you, and I welcome input when I ask for it as well. It's been over 35 years since John's been ordained, and I know that dates me, but denial doesn't change anything. But what that means is we have had lots of opportunities to serve on teams, pastoral teams, Bible school administrator and teaching teams, counseling center teams, org teams, and it's been a learning and a growing experience. And I come to you out of those experiences not having all the answers, not necessarily because of that being qualified to be up here, because there was a lot we did wrong. Hopefully a few things that we got right as well. As we heard this morning, or sometime, I think it was Rick, said that he believes when God calls us to something that it fits our giftings. Okay? I'm on board with that. I totally agree. I will follow it up, though, with saying that sometimes, I agree with that when it comes to callings, okay? But sometimes we are still asked to do things that push us totally out of what we feel we're good at, or almost opposed to our giftings, okay? And sometimes we're asked to do those things and we're stretched, really, really stretched. But I just call you to think about this reality. When that happens, God has purpose. If nothing else, to show you that you really can't power through this on your own. You really, really do need him. Things won't always go smoothly when you work as a team. We're complex. We're women, okay? We're complex. We're diverse. And there are times that we really, really keenly feel those differences. You're serving with ladies who aren't exactly like you. Thank God. Some of them can do things better than you. Some of them don't do real well at all with the role that they're supposed to be doing. Some of them relate better, maybe, than you do. All this is to say that does not make them superior or inferior, just different. I'm glad. Our differences are meant to complement not divide. Our differences are actually what make us effective as a team. And yes, you heard me right. It's our differences that make us effective. But often it's our differences that turn us into rivals. We're going to go into that a little more later. But since you can hardly wait to open those M&Ms, we're going to deal with that right now. We're actually going to do a little quiz. And this is what I want you to do. I want you to think about the ladies on your leadership team. And I want you to think about the one who may be your biggest thorn, the one you don't get along with so well, the one you might feel threatened by, the one that you are least close to. Think about her. And maybe there aren't any that fit that category, and that's great. But if there are, pick her, okay? Pick her and stay with her throughout this quiz. I'm going to ask you some questions about your interactions with her, particularly in the last 3 months. And if you have trouble remembering, just get it as close as you can. This is also a private... Don't be looking at your neighbor's lap, okay? Don't pay attention to yourself. Think about you and your relationship with her, and keep this as private as possible. This is to help you think about how you are doing with the lady that you're struggling the most with. This is not to be shameful. This is not to be embarrassing. Even if nobody else is, this is not meant to embarrass you. This is not meant to heap on guilt. God forbid. We don't want to do this in this session. This is to help you think about how well or how not so well you're doing with your team players. Okay, let's get going. With the first part here, the first 7 points, there are going to be things that are not necessarily taboo. There are going to be things that will drain a relationship, though. Okay? So, open your bag, and as I go through these points, if I go too fast, raise your hand. If you need a little more time to think, but I don't have time to stumble, and we have to keep moving. So if I go too fast, just raise your hand. So take one piece of candy out of your bag as we go through these points and lay it on your lap, okay? So take one piece of candy out if you have disagreed significantly on a particular issue in the last 3 months-ish. Can I go on? Take a piece of candy out if you've shared an event without saying one word to each other. Take a piece of candy out if you were corrected by her. Take one out if you spoke about her in frustration, either to your spouse, to a close friend, or someone. Take one out if you have felt embarrassed by her words or her behavior. Take one out if you've procrastinated to interact with her, avoided contact with her. That's similar to another one we had. Take one piece out if you've regretted something that you've said to her. Now I want you to count the pieces in your lap and remember that number. Now, from your lap, these next ones, take a piece of candy out of your lap and put it back in your bag if, over the last 3 months, you've shared a hug with her. Put one back if you've shared words of appreciation and affirmation. That can be an email, that can be face-to-face, that can be a note card, however. Put one back if you have spoken highly of her behind her back. Put one back if you've exchanged a gift or a service, okay? An item of food, exchange babysitting, whatever. working together even. Put a piece back if you have shared or sat down with her over coffee. Put a piece back if you have prayed for her or with her. Put a piece back if you have entered her home or had her in yours. I want you to think about the candies that, if there are candies still in your lap. Okay. Do you know how I want you to think about this? If there's candy still in your lap, then that is indicative that, at least with the questions I've asked you about, there's more drain going on in that relationship than there is life. Again, the point is not to condemn or place guilt. The point is to help you think about how you can implement more positive interaction in that particular relationship. Our relationships can be likened to banks, okay? We put in, we draw out. If either one of you in the relationship is drawing out more than you are putting in, then there's a deficit. You're operating in the red. There is a problem, and the relationship will suffer. So you need to think about what you can start to do to have more positive interaction. I'm not asking you that you feel like doing this. I'm asking you to engage with her, even when you don't feel like it, and do positive things with her. Now, you may nibble on those while I keep talking. So, teamwork. I want you to think a little bit about a catering team, okay? That's easier than the teams we're on, okay? That gets a little more tricky. Think about a food team, okay? So let's say that me and whoever, we are needing to put together a dinner for a banquet tonight. One of us makes amazing, smooth, creamy mashed potatoes slathered in brown butter. Somebody else is good at desserts. Her cheesecakes never crack. Her layer cakes never slide. She's just good. Somebody else puts together a mean salad. Somebody else knows how to set a gorgeous table. Okay? Everybody has their strengths. They're different. Are they working together? Yes. Are they working together well? Yes. Why? Because they're good at different things. Their differences makes them a good team. So, if I'm on that team, and I am needing her spatula, and I say, hey, I need that for a little bit. Never mind that she's using it. I need it. So I grab it. What I'm stirring up, my bowl is just too small. So I help myself to her large bowl. I need the oven when she needs the oven. Are we a good team? I've got what I want. Thank you very much. Are we a good team? No, we're not. I'm being selfish. I'm being grasping. I'm not letting her have what she deserves and needs. For us to make a good team, I need to care about what I'm responsible for, but also care about her and what she needs. For us to make a good team, we need to work together, to share a whole different mindset than what I just demonstrated would be something like, hey, when you don't need that apron anymore, I would be glad to have that while I fry this fish. Okay? We're asking. We're not grabbing. Now, why is it? That makes sense to us, right? Makes perfect sense. Let's switch to spiritual teams, leadership teams, org teams, whatever team you're on. Why is it that we easily turn prickly when her gifting differs from mine? We begin to compare, and we come up short. or were critical of how she does things or how she relates to other women. Maybe she isn't real supportive of the team decisions. Maybe she doesn't do well with confidentiality. And maybe we even begin to think, boy, this team would be better off without her. Is that how teamwork should look? Is that how Jesus wants his bride to function? We're women, right? It's not hard to look around and see another woman's giftings. We're pretty perceptive of that. We witness her effectiveness in how she relates to people, how she gets along with other people, in teaching, in serving, in organization, in loving other people, and we long for that too. Okay? We see it, we recognize it as a good thing, and it's like, I wish I could be more like that. Is that wrong? I read somewhere one time, covet earnestly the best gifts. When it becomes a problem is when I begin to resent her. Okay? Instead of affirm and bless her for what she's good at, I begin to resent her. And I start to compare my shabby giftings with hers. Really? Really? Who says mine are below hers or beneath hers? Who says hers are better? Isn't the Lord capable of gifting us in ways that please him? Can we give him that freedom? Who am I to compare her gifts with mine? Furthermore, when I'm dissatisfied with mine, am I not kind of dissatisfied with him? 1 Corinthians 12:12. Christ's body is one, but it has many members. All members have not the same office, the same giftings, the same job, but we're all working on the same team. We function differently, but we're team members. That means we're working for the same end. This is my hand, okay? Look at that. It has four fingers and a thumb. Every one of those members are a different size, a different length, a different circumference. They have different jobs, but you know what? This hand works together. I don't use my thumb for digging in my ear. I don't use this third finger for pointing. They cooperate, though. They each have their function, but they work together. A couple months ago, I crashed into a bedpost, and I'm quite sure I broke my toe. That little thing hurt like crazy. And it got all swollen. What it didn't do was turn black. I wanted it to. If it was going to hurt so bad, I wanted to be able to take a picture and send it to my children, and it wouldn't cooperate. Normally, my toes and my feet work together perfectly fine. But think comparatively for a moment. Okay, here is one place I'll let you compare. Look at my body mass. Don't analyze that too closely. Think of the mass of my one toe. The second toe, actually. I don't know how I did that. Missed the little toe and hit the second one. Think of that little toe. How can that little thing have so much power? It affected how I walked. It affected my body. It wasn't cooperating and functioning the way it was supposed to, so my whole body suffered. Are you getting the connection? When one team player gets out of joint, it messes with the whole team. I I wish it wouldn't in some ways. You know, in our carnalness, we can wish it wouldn't. We wish that our pettiness could be coddled in private, okay, and not come out there for everybody to see. But it doesn't. That's why Jesus calls us to integrity as women, which simply means what I am in public, what you see of me these 2 days, is exactly what I should be in private. Now, we serve on teams. That implies some non-negotiables, doesn't it? Help me out. What are some? If I'm a team member, what cannot happen? You can't take so long. We don't have this amount of time.
We can't pull different directions.
What?
You can't pull different directions.
That's not a team. I can't do everything myself. No rival.
Why not let pettiness get in the way?
Right. Pettiness has to go. Easily hurt has to go. Rivalry has to go. Taking up a following has to go, and that can be really, really subtle, okay? So I don't get along, and I'm... Okay, let me keep going. I don't get along, and so I talk to my friend about it, and it's like I'm really struggling here. And I can subtly be motivated to get somebody on my team, somebody who understands, somebody who agrees that she said something wrong or whatever. Now, don't hear me wrong. There are places to take these kind of things. I'm not asking you to deal with conflict and differences alone, but there are right places to take them. On a more positive note, a non-negotiable would be pay critical attention to personal growth. If you are so busy serving others that you don't have time to nurture your own spirit, you're gonna fall flat on your face. Another is, I think we are called. We must walk worthy of that calling. Ephesians 4:1, in my paraphrase, walk worthy of your calling with humility and meekness, being long-suffering, forbearing, and loving, working hard at maintaining unity. As I thought about this topic, I chose 2 categories to focus on, and I present them actually with a good deal of trepidation, okay, because I'm afraid that you're going to walk out of this room and think or feel or say, she made this way too simplistic. It's way more complicated than what she's acting. Granted, any relationship can be fairly complicated. But I follow that up with saying, following the principles of Jesus are not complicated. They might be hard, but he doesn't make it complicated. So, that's my little backpedal for the day. I had to settle on something, and so I settled on this. 2 things. The 2 categories would be attitudes, or things we feel and think, and the second would be practices, things that we actually do. As a team player, it's important that I have learned humility. If I am haughty and arrogant, think my ideas are best, think my husband's ideas are best, and I'm regularly shooting down hers, even if it's just in my head, I'm a problem. It doesn't matter whether I'm the bishop's wife or the deacon's wife. Position does not matter here. In fact, let me tell you something. The more prominent or significant your role, the more need there is to practice humility. How do I get humility? How do I access it? Is it something I do? Is it something I don't do? It seems to me a fairly elusive thing. How can I access it? How can it be attained? My personal opinion is that it comes fairly quietly and somewhat unannounced as I put off other things, okay? As I put off pride, arrogance, haughtiness, elevated opinions of myself, put downs of others, wrong aspirations, and you might be thinking of more. And yet I also believe that humility is more than just putting away, more than just the absence of things. I think it's also a recognition of who I am and who I am not. I am under authority. I might be a leader. I am under authority, and I am not the final word. I'm me. I'm not God. And it's really, really easy to get things all switched up here, isn't it? We must not, we dare not use our positions of leadership to elevate ourselves, to find our identity, to try to secure an illusion of importance. We dare not. I must not take what Jesus has called me to and use it as a way to elevate myself. Kingdom work is not about us as individuals. We're just blessed and incredibly grateful to be a small cog in his big wheel. A proper understanding and acceptance of who I am and what I'm about will keep me from lots and lots of sin. Not the least of which is comparing, and on the heels of that, jealousy. Most of the time, if I start comparing, I end up short. Listen to this verse, James 3:15-16. For jealousy and selfishness are not God's kind of wisdom. Such things are earthly, unspiritual, and demonic. For wherever there is jealousy and selfish ambition, there you will find disorder and evil of every kind. Whoa. Those are hard words. Those are not my words. I could not stand here and say jealousy and selfishness are demonic. But James does. Where there's jealousy and selfishness, he goes on to say, there is disorder and evil of every kind. We don't want that on our teams, do we? More than once in Proverbs, it says, before honor is humility. Now, it's not honor that we're going after, okay? But we do care about living honorably, and that requires humility. I don't know how to talk about humility without talking about gratitude. I hardly even know how to separate them. I think if I am grateful, then I am not quickly looking at someone else and saying, oh, I want that gift. If I am humble, I think I'm in a posture to actually receive the gifts that God has given to me, and I can be grateful for them. I'm not sure that I'm saying this real well. I'm not sure you're getting what I'm meaning or that it's making sense. When I have come to terms with who I am as a person and what I am about, and can be grateful for that rather than dissatisfied and resentful, I'm actually better equipped to deal with conflict on a team. Everybody on the team might be humble. Everybody on the team might be grateful. Everybody on the team might be really paying good attention to personal growth. Everybody can be doing all the right things, but because we are different, there can still be conflict. So when I am humble, though, and when I am grateful, I am better equipped to deal with it when conflict comes up. And the gratitude helps me what? Muster through it. Okay, because I think it can actually help me understand why we're on the same team. This lady that I don't get along with so well, or that rubs me the wrong way. I think it can help me understand why we're here together. It should help me to understand how God wants to grow me through her, my thorn. That's a mouthful to swallow. He will use her, if you let him, he will use her to shape you. Let's move on. Practices, things we do. Loving service is the first one I have here. Let me say this to you. If service is beneath you, then leadership is beyond you. If service is beneath you, then leadership is beyond you. We are first and foremost servants, not leaders. Jesus was our perfect example. I can't spend time on this, but you know, he washed the feet. He picked up the towel and washed the feet of his disciples. This was the job of household servants. This was the job of lowly slaves. And instead, the king. Stoops in front of them and washes their feet. And as many times as I've heard this story, when I think about this, I want to say, no, Jesus, got this all wrong. This is not how it works. It's not how it's supposed to look. Jesus the servant. So as he kneels, he's teaching. What's he teaching them? He tells them, you ought also to wash one another's feet. What's he saying? Take a bowl, kneel down in front of them and wash their feet? Yes, but what else? There's more. I'm convinced there's more. What did he mean? What does it look like to wash your sister's feet? What will it look like to go from here? Go home. Wash your sister's feet. What will it look like? What's he calling you to do? And you know what? It gets harder. How will you respond when the one that you're not getting along with very well wants to wash yours? Will you perceive it authentically and receive it humbly? Loving service means I will see and respond to the needs of those around me, yes, even that team player. Loving service means I will not flaunt my abilities and resources, but I will offer them appropriately. Loving service means I will be willing to get my hands dirty if necessary, without the need to be noticed, thanked, or affirmed. And I will do it out of love, not obligation. It's possible to serve and not love. Yeah, you've probably experienced this. But it is not possible to love without serving. Love calls us to action. So we need to be willing to serve. But sometimes that takes the form of words, encouraging words. When I use the words life words, death words, I suppose all of you can call up personal experiences where you have been the recipient of one or the other, or both. Those memories are either happy ones or painful ones. I remember it's been some years ago now, we had a son who was making bad choices. Choices that affected his life long term. Down a path that, as his parents, we would have certainly not chosen for him. And it translated into many dark years for John and I. Over that time, I had an FB student girl that I did not interact with regularly at all. She pulled me into conversation, and she, I guess, was asking about my life, my schedule, and I ended up sharing how difficult public speaking has become because we feel like such failures as parents. Like our public voice was just gone. I don't recall what all she said, or how much even, but I don't think I'll ever forget. She said, her words, "God has many wayward children, and he is not a failure." Life words changed my perspective, gave me courage. I'm not God, okay? God just doesn't make mistakes. I do. But her point was, there is waywardness going on all the time that does not necessarily translate automatically into failure. Are you an encourager on your team? Do your words make people want to keep going or give up? Last point. Fortunately or unfortunately, I have not decided which, but if we work on teams, we're going to have plenty of opportunity to experience or to extend forgiveness. The ladies you serve with they won't always get it right. You won't always get it right. You will have to receive forgiveness. There will be times when they hurt you. There will be times probably when you think your husband is not treated unfairly. That hurts. I'm in a hurry, and so it's not coming out right. Times when your husband is not treated fairly, and that will hurt worse. What are you going to do with the injustices of life? They'll be there. What are you going to do with the resentments? By the way, someone has said there are no justifiable resentments. I don't know. That's what they said. They're probably right. What are you going to do? What are you going to do with the opportunities you have to become resentful? How will you replace resentment with forbearance and love? How can you turn insult and injury into opportunities to forgive? And what if you don't even want to sometimes? Have you been there? I'm going to suggest it's one way is by recognizing that what comes to me, even if it comes through people, what comes to me has gone through God's screening. By remembering he has a plan for perfecting me in everything that comes to me. Everything. That by necessity means that I believe that those who wrong me are actually tools of his to refine me. Ken Miller last night. How many were not in last evening's session? He kind of stole my thunder. He told a story that I was going to close with. And I'm going to anyway, I think, because some of you weren't there. And even for those of you who were, it's a powerful story of forgiveness. And I have a hard time even reading it, even though I've read it many times. I have trouble reading it without being drawn into the emotion of it. So I'm going to read it without any more words, and then I'll be done. Oh, I did want to say this yet. That candy quiz that we did, though I would encourage you to... I have handouts with those points I went across because I think for that to be effective, it would be helpful for, helpful for you to be able to have that in front of you. Not that those are the only ways that take life or give life at all, but if you have it in front of you, it might help you to think about what, if anything, needs to change. So, at the end, you'll have opportunity to pick one up if you want one. And now for the story. Imagine this scene from a courtroom trial in South Africa. A frail black, pay attention to the color, woman stands slowly to her feet. She is something over 70 years of age. Facing her from across the room are several white security police officers, one of whom, Mr. Vanderbrock, has just been tried and found implicated in the murders of both the woman's son and her husband some years before. It was indeed Mr. Vanderbrock, it has now been established, who had come to the woman's home a number of years back, taken her son, shot him at point-blank range, and then burned the young man's body while he and officers partied nearby. Several years later, Vanderbrock and his cohorts had returned to take away her husband as well. For many months, she heard nothing of his whereabouts. Then, almost 2 years after her husband's disappearance, Vanderbrock came back to fetch the woman herself. How vividly she remembers that evening, going to a place beside a river where she was shown her husband, bound and beaten, but still strong in spirit, lying on a pile of wood. The last words she heard from his lips as the officers poured gasoline over his body and set him aflame were, "Father, forgive them." And now, the woman stands in the courtroom and listens. To the confessions offered by Mr. Vanderbrock, a member of South Africa's Truth and Reconciliation Commission turns to her and asks, "So, what do you want? How should justice be done to this man who has so brutally destroyed your family?" And she said, "I want three things. I want first to be taken to the place where my husband's body was burned so that I can gather up the dust and give his remains a decent burial." She pauses and then continues, "My husband and son were my only family. I want, secondly, therefore, for Mr. Vanderbrock to become my son. I would like for him to come twice a month to the ghetto and spend a day with me so that I can pour out on him whatever love I still have remaining in me." And finally she says, "I want a third thing. I would like Mr. Vanderbrock to know that I offer him my forgiveness because Jesus Christ died to forgive. This was also the wish of my husband. And so, I would kindly ask someone to come to my side and lead me across the courtroom so that I can take Mr. Vanderbrock in my arms, embrace him, and let him know that he is truly forgiven." Yes. As the court assistants come to lead the elderly woman across the room, Mr. Vanderbrock, overwhelmed by what he has just heard, faints away. And as he does, those in the courtroom, friends, family, neighbors, all victims of decades of oppression and injustice, begin to sing softly but assuredly, "Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound."
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769 or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.